guys. We're back. I'm Tony.
I'm Anna.
Scott.
Adam.
Olivia.
And this week we'll be talking about The Perks of Being a Wallflower. So, it's the book, well, it's originally a book and it turned into a movie starring Emma Watson, Logan Learman, and Ezra Miller. And it's the story of Charlie, who is a freshman in high school, and he's kind of a loner, doesn't really have that many friends. And he basically is taken under the wing of these two seniors. So you basically see how his whole first year of high school turns out. And I wanted to know how everybody else thought about it, mainly because I love the book and the movie, no matter like what like lens I'm watching it through. So I wanted to know how everyone else thought about it. Just like generally, like before we dive deeper into like the nitty gritty, I want to know overall what everybody liked about it or didn't like.
Right at me for didn't like. The cynic. Now, there are things that I don't like, you're right. And we had briefly talked about that, you and I, just in the hallway where we were waiting. What I remind myself constantly, I love this movie, I do. I own it. I did read the book years and years ago before I was taking an education course, which was something about adolescent literature, and they were trying to pull in some more like local or recent ones. You know, you read your classic like Catcher in the Rye and whatnot, and they tried to pull in some recent ones too. I love that they bring in mental health into a younger setting, because I think it's frequently ignored. So I think that's incredibly important. I also have to remind myself sometimes though when watching it, like this is a teen novel, this is a teen book. There are things in it that are cliche, and they're supposed to be cliche. I like though that it comes from the point of view of a little bit more of the outsider. I think we get kind of these coming to age films that are a little bit older, early 20s, where people are like, it's okay to be quirky and weird and like whatnot. But you don't see it a lot when they're young, when these kids are freshmen in high school and they're suffering from the bullying and suffering from sometimes depressive issues and whatnot. I think it was really good to finally show a young generation, you know, a film that wasn't like you were the prom king and the coolest person ever, because most people don't live that in high school. But we didn't really show it all that often. It was one of the more earlier films. I mean, now it's cool to be quirky. But this was a film that, how many years ago was it? 4 or 5 years ago?
I think it was in 2012.
Okay.
And it's set in the academic year of 1991-92.
So it's even earlier set then. And I think that's just an incredible message. Also, you know, I want to give a little bit of a props, because it is outside Pittsburgh, which is about an hour from where I grew up, that, you know, more famous scene where they're riding in the truck and whatever through the tunnel. I've ridden through that tunnel hundreds of times in my youth. Did you do the thing? No, you know, my parents weren't always keen on me hanging out of a moving car through tunnels, but it's just funny when I drive through it, it just is a little flashback to the movie and the nostalgia that the movie kind of brings you back to. Whether you were cool or, you know, a little bit quirky in high school, I think you can find a character that you identify with in this film.
Definitely, I identified with the main character, because in high school I was also very shy, and it was, you know, hard to, for shy people or for people who weren't very outgoing or, you know, cool, quote unquote, to make their presence known. And there was one point in the film where they all gave a toast, and the main character, Charlie, was like, well, I didn't know that anybody noticed me. I didn't realize that anybody noticed me. And I think there are people in high school like that, and noticing people and like creating this awareness that there are cool people out there. You just might never have even thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool.
I really like this movie. And I guess, you know, thinking of Adam and cliches, I guess there probably were some, and I just overlooked them because I was going with the emotional appeal, which is not usually like me. I loved the juxtaposition and the use of music in this film.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like the music was a character Of course, there was a lot of nostalgia. I'm a big fan of the mixtape. I could also relate to the idea of, they don't exactly say this, but in a relationship, bad taste in music is such a turnoff.
Oh my god!
I have broken like, off relationships due simply to bad music taste.
It's wow. It could be a
deal
breaker.
That's extreme. I mean, I've broke up people over their voting. Not.
And it's set exactly 10 years after I was in high school, so my senior year was 1981 and 1982. And I felt like I had a similar group in high school. Shout out to all my high school friends that we hung out and we were a little quirky. We were not popular, but we weren't unpopular. We, you know, but I got a lot of support and you know, it was so I could identify with the mm-hmm. characters. Something that I will want to get into, boy, there was a lot of illusion of sexual manipulation and its impact. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to watch this film right after Stevie. Mm-hmm. And so maybe we'll get into that too. But I just want to say, overall, I really thought it was a well put together film.
Agreed.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think it was great to kind of get into this film, especially this weekend. I had a like lengthy discussion of just, do you remember this person? Do you remember that person? As I was speaking with one of my friends who we went to a total of 4 schools together. So first grade, high school, and then 2 different experiences in college. And so we kind of reminisced over like how high school was. Do you remember this person? Do you remember that person? And part of this whole notion of, you know, if you give people a try, if you get to know them, I was in like every type of class experience prior to college. So philosophy was a different experience for me than my theater, and then I was in creative writing, but I was also in like, you know, British Lit and all these other things. So I felt like I got to know people in the setting where I guess they were most comfortable. Mm-hmm. So even if they weren't the most outspoken person in some of my other courses, I got to see them in their element, so yeah. to speak. And I think that hearing Charlie speak about his thought process is kind of related to, you know, I was glad that I was open to just, hey, you know, getting to know everybody. Like, you know, that's what class was for me. Like, getting to know people and making the most of it.
Yeah. I, personally, well, in high school, well, this movie came out in 2012 when I was graduating high school. And it didn't describe my group of friends, but I knew, like, a group of friends that I always associate with this group just because they were like the quirky group of friends where it's like you knew they were gonna be great after high school. Like everybody, we didn't really have popular people at my high school just because it wasn't a 4-year school. It was, there were so many people at the school. It's one campus, which was freshmen and sophomores, and across town was another campus with juniors and seniors. So you didn't get that fresh meat like feel, or like what does it feel to be like in the same like vicinity as seniors. So it was kind of
wow.
like
yeah that'd be very different.
Exactly.
Yeah, there were yeah. seven
hierarchy not being there like
yeah.
that.
8 different mm-hmm. middle schools combined into one high school, and after a certain period of time around like I want to say the late 80s, so many people started to move into the suburban area that they had to, instead of adding on to the first school, they made a totally different school across town. So watching movies like this that have to do with like high school dynamics is really like, I love it because I didn't get that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But I did know a group of kids like this group where they were okay with their sexuality, okay with their views, and they had this like higher thinking already, you know, like mm-hmm. that usually when you get to college it's like I can study whatever I want. But they were in high school, like, there was a girl who wore heels every day and dressed up, and now she's a model, because she knew early on that she had style and she was going to do it.
You know, I think that's kind of a newer thing too, because, I mean, I graduated in 2004, so it was like 8 years before you, but not a lot of people came out. Quirky wasn't cool.
It wasn't.
Like, it was that you didn't fit in. And, you know, I mean, I tried to even picture, like, what this group was in my high school. And I did do some plays and stuff, but I was also, like, prom king and the football games and stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
You got a prom king.
You know, it meant a lot back then, and now I look back and
I'm
like...
We have a celebrity in here.
Exactly.
I actually... Well, you know, I tried to do a little nostalgic thing this weekend in prep for this film. Like, I got out my crown, because I still own it, and I went, and I didn't wear it to the thing, but I went and saw Rocky Horror Picture, because I'd never experienced it before. So I tried to, like, immerse myself back into this, like, high school thing, like, kind of, like, bringing back some of my nostalgic things, and then what they did, too, with this, like, Rocky Horror is a culture in itself.
I mean,
they do it at the Egyptian Theater, which is right down in DePauw. You should go try it, because it is a... It is interesting, but it made me remember who these kind of people were in the book, these characters, and just the artistic, like, that, I don't know how to put it where it doesn't sound, like, rude, but it's gonna, either way, like, that wasn't cool when I was in school, and I love now that being quirky, being different, like, we realize those, like, those things that make us feel different aren't burdens, they're actually what make you great.
Right.
And we're starting to really accept that at younger ages.
It seems to me that it's begun an age of self-acceptance, especially with the social media. It was really harmful at first, like, we had these, and we still, I believe, have these social norms that we try to fall into, but there's so many movements for self-acceptance, for personal beauty, beauty of, you know, your mind and, you know, everything. Just being who you are is really, like,
beautiful.
The thing. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
We're all going to sound like the man in the van down by the river.
I really loved that it was, like, the whole self-love things. And I liked that, even though it was, like, set in the 90s, that there was this, like, aspect of, like, sexuality that wasn't... It's like, you don't really see that in movies. And just the fact that it's like, oh yeah, it's like, you have your groups of people here, but we're going to focus on the, like, outcasts. Mm-hmm. They weren't really outcasts. Like, I watched the movie, like, I wanted to be friends with them. Sure. But, you know, usually it's like, oh, the jock and the cheerleader.
Yeah.
And, like, oh, the jock.
And they had a gay character actually act in a way stereotypically homosexual. They never do that in films. It's like, oh, you didn't know they were gay until they come out and say it. And maybe you'll see them, like, with the same-sex character, but never touching. And this film kind of was like, screw it, we're going for it.
I actually had an experience, two different experiences for high school, because I moved in junior year. And my first one was in suburban, like, regular high school, with all of the typical, I guess, what is it, roles or denominations of people in the high school. And like you guys said, my quirky group of friends weren't really accepted. We just kind of stuck together, didn't really talk to anybody. However, when I moved to Louisiana, I went to a magnet high school, which is kind of like a little more advanced or whatever, but it was very small. It was only about 400 students in there, and it was a completely different experience. People were more open to each other, and they accepted each other a lot more, and we were kind of bound because of the smallness of, and we knew each other. So everybody had their own groups or didn't have their own groups, and everyone was accepted. So it's really interesting seeing different types of high schools and across the whole nation, and, you know.
Yeah.
My high school is very cliquey, but I'm overly friendly, so I force people to be my friends on a daily basis. Like, we're going to be friends. Okay, cool. I'll see you next week.
But that idea of support that was shown in this movie, I think, is extremely powerful, especially during those years when you're trying to learn about yourself, when you're trying to figure out your identity and whether or not you accept who you are and whether other people accept as well.
Yeah.
Erickson stages of development,
yeah.
Identity versus role confusion, and in family systems theory, individuation, discovering who you are, apart from your family, with your peer group.
It's interesting, like, to watch this movie for me, because I know last week I did a presentation on, like, middle school counseling, and when you go from, like, middle school, where it's, like, same-sex peers have, like, the most weight of opinion in your eyes, and you're so focused on fitting in and, you know, sticking to, like, the status quo, and then you get to high school, where it's, like, high school generally is, like, it's supposed to be the best 4 years of your life, but in my opinion, college is. And it was just, like, to be doing all that research about, like, middle school and to have this character who had a rough, like, middle school experience because his best friend committed suicide, and then that he divulges this information to someone and they don't go, like screaming for the hills in the other direction. They actually, like, take him in and they're, like, more accepting of him in that way. And I really liked that the mental health aspect in this movie was so generally accepting. Like, his family accepted it, his brother and sister accepted it, like, all of his friends that knew about it were, like, this, like, really, like, influential support system that helped him get through it, even though he had more than one, like, mental
break. And I think this would be a good part to kind of, like, bring in to anyone who maybe hasn't seen the film, that
yeah.
he is coming back from, like, a mental health care facility where he stayed for, it seemed like an extended period of time, I don't really know if it was ever disclosed, but he was coming back and maybe acclimating not only back into his life, but into high school as, he's a freshman,
yes.
correct? Okay.
He was a 15-year-old freshman.
Okay.
Yeah. And when the movie starts, it's just basically, like, he's a little background for people who haven't seen it. The movie starts and he's talking, well, it's all first person narrative, so he's writing to a friend.
Yeah, and I actually, there was, like, this little Cliff Notes version online, and so I looked at that, and so it's a style that's called epistolary.
It's my favorite type of literature, like,
so
favorite type
all,
of writing.
It's all written in letters. We
yeah.
don't ever, at least in the movie, we don't ever find out who he is writing to. It is some friend, but I also got the sense almost that it was an imaginary
yeah.
friend, like writing a diary.
And I almost got the notion that he was writing to his best friend that passed away.
That's
what
I thought.
Oh, yes.
So,
oh
yeah. Because he was still communicating with him, and like when the movie, when he got really involved with his friends, he was apologizing to his friend that, I'm sorry I haven't been writing so much, but I have been participating
yes.
in
yes.
real life,
yeah.
in these
yeah.
activities.
And at the beginning of the movie, when he says, dear friend, she says that I should write to you because, like, something, like, you won't judge me.
It's like
so it's like,
yeah,
yeah it's, to me,
yeah.
it was like, that's what his counselor, like, said something to him, like, you know. What I thought was, oh, maybe he was told to write to his friend.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like a coping strategy.
Yeah, we do that
yeah.
with grief and bereavement.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
And so related to his mental health issues, I thought it was somewhat subtle. Like, you really kind of had to look for it. And I'm not sure what it all entailed. But the symptoms seem to be blackouts, like maybe at times of rage or extreme
yeah.
emotion.
Mm-hmm.
There seem to be some dissociating.
Flashbacks,
like that he couldn't get these things out of his mind. He couldn't stop seeing them. And some depression and obviously suicidal ideation.
Mm-hmm. And when reading some of the, like, things on IMDb and other blogs about it and whatnot, it does, when talking about things that could be, like, mental health or diagnoses, it starts to get, I think, really hard to read some of those things, especially, like, after, you know, learning and getting a master's in the field and starting to work with real clients who present real symptoms like this. Because a large portion of people were putting, like, dissociative identity and stuff because of, like, I don't think they even know what that means. I don't think they have any clue that that's what's considered, like, multiple
people see Sybil
kind of
one
things.
Time and just
or you hear the word antisocial and it's like in counseling or mental health, antisocial does not mean like you are just introverted, like that is a completely different thing. So reading like the layman's kind of comments started to frustrate me.
Yeah.
And also just because, especially I'm learning even more here now working with Dr. Adam Carter, that childhood abuse, especially something like sexual abuse, relates and can really show different symptoms of different things like personality disorders when it really just is PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's really a traumatic incident to happen at such a young age, and that abuse can come off as so many different things when it really is just PTSD.
Yeah.
And typically PTSD and depression kind of do go hand in hand. And I that's what I would have said was kind of his mental health.
I see. Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of miscommunication on blogs, especially from people who maybe don't know as much about the field. I saw Asperger's, I saw all different things being said, and I was like, that, no.
Nope.
Yeah, and it's like, I think in the book, from what I remember, he goes more in depth with what happened, you
sure.
know, because it's a narrative.
Yeah.
But from the movie, it's like, you kind of get, like, clips of, like, how important his aunt was to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, towards the end, you realize that, like, it was more than just, like, a family, like, friendly situation. She kind of, like, broke that trust and then died. So
yes.
It was, like, an abrupt end to it at, like, so he held in a lot of that, like, emotion, like, and, you know, towards the end when he calls his sister, he's like, I killed her, right? Like, he thinks that's the reason why. And it's just like...
And that scene. Oh, my gosh. Anyone else, like, just cry at that scene?
I cried through the whole movie.
Now, I did have a question, because I haven't read the book in years, and I was trying to remember. Did Aunt... What was her...
Helen.
Helen. Was Aunt Helen's death a suicide?
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh,
because I thought in the book it alluded a little more to a suicide.
Okay.
And then also in the book it talks about that she was sexually abused as a young
person, and that was
as well.
Brought up.
She might have been abused by her boyfriends or relationships. I'm
okay.
not sure if it was sexual or domestic.
Yeah.
But
there's something else I think that was
in
the book that came up
about
her being abused by one
I
of
thought
the
that,
family
I
friends.
Thought that Sam, the Emma Watson character, so Charlie is talking to Sam and says that his Aunt Helen, who previously had been his favorite person in the world before meeting Sam, that she had gone through what Sam had gone through, which was sexual abuse as a child,
mm-hmm.
and she had come out of it better or worked through it.
Okay, I
thought that
yeah.
that was mentioned.
And I thought it was very, well, interesting that even though the main character had all these, like past instances and like mental health issues, you find out that every single person he's connected to, or almost every single person, also has some type of like issue or something happened to them.
Some kind of trauma.
Somebody's always dealing with something.
So
it's like,
yeah.
welcome to the real world. We all have something.
Yeah.
So when Sam said, "Oh, my first kiss was I was 11, and it was my dad's boss," and you're watching it, you're like, "Wait, what?"
Yeah.
And then I think it was towards the middle of the movie where someone was explaining Sam and Patrick, I think, and they were talking about how when Sam was a freshman, guys on the football team used to like get her drunk. So
yeah.
it's like, you know, there's a history to her mental health. And then what happens with her stepbrother, Patrick, where he's openly gay in high school, dating or secretly dating the star of the
Brand.
Football team. Whose dad is like heavily religious, so it's like there's a whole nother dynamic to him. And he even has his like breaking point where he like tells Charlie that he watched Brad's like father like beat him, and
mm-hmm.
Brad was just like okay with it. So it was like everyone had some type of like issue going on.
Yeah, and I love that like that they were brought up. In the other films, I've kind of had like issues with like, oh, they put this character in here just for the main character to kind of reflect off this.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, everyone had their own story, and whether it was brief or not, we still got little glimpses into their lives. They weren't just secondary characters placed there for the main character. They were real people.
I wish they would have been more in depth about the brother and sister, though, because in the book, the sister plays like a very large role in Charlie's life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even a like letter that he writes to his friends stating that like his sister and the boyfriend get into it on many occasions. It wasn't just like getting slapped.
Yeah.
In the beginning, right?
Yeah, the beginning. In the book, she also gets pregnant by this boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And then he breaks up with her. So then her and Charlie end up going to the clinic so she can get an abortion. And it's kind of like he talks a lot about his sister in the movie because like they're under the same roof. So when I read the book and then watched the movie, it was just like people who haven't read the book won't understand her, like how afraid she was. Like it'll just be like, oh my God, my brother's like, he's like, something's wrong. But for people who read the book, it's like, oh my God. Well, it's like, it just goes more. That's, I wish it would have been more in depth with the character development of the sister as well.
Okay.
I agree.
Yeah.
I like that. And I completely forgot about it since reading that. I'm gonna have to borrow that book.
Okay.
So and with the sexual incidences of,
mm-hmm.
it seemed like there was overlap and parallel, like, but of what happened. And so there's a line that I think Sam and Patrick say. No, I can't find it.
Was it like a certain scene?
Let's move on. Sorry.
You can look
back. Well, I wanted to kind of bring up the coping, the actual therapy, the writing, journaling,
yeah.
how
mm-hmm.
big that is. And then I was thinking back to when they were at lunch in the beginning. Is that Sam who says I'm a bulimus?
Yes.
Yes.
And I think that although she reframes that, just the idea of reframing something and getting into how are you coping with things, and even the choice of, you mentioned earlier about anger and blackouts, how if you have these situations going on, you have loss, you have, you're grieving, you have a lot of emotions that you have been bottling, how therapeutic that journaling is. And how your support group, I think this film, although it isn't specifically saying, journaling your emotions, that way you're still releasing them and they're not all kept in, or creating this group of individuals who typically one would be left alone has now found a group to support them. And then someone else, especially in terms of the relationship with not Charlie,
Patrick,
yeah. So typically in a lot of films you would see someone who identifies as gay being outcast, but then again, another person being embraced. These are all reinforcing that therapeutic alliance and the importance of the relationship. I think this film highlighted those significances very well,
mm-hmm.
in form of what type of therapy are we seeing, even if we aren't specifically watching a counseling session. How are things unfolding? How are the world viewing things, but how is the individual being able to frame those? And I think through journaling we see that reframing and still addressing what is going on at the heart of the problem with each individual.
I want to like talk about the character of Patrick for a moment, because
mm-hmm.
like Adam said, it wasn't just like the, oh, he's here for like the development of the main
mm-hmm.
character. He was like a main character in itself.
Yeah.
And I liked that his role wasn't just the closet gay. Like, he was open and proud of it, and I liked that he stood up for himself in the lunchroom scene, where it was like, it wasn't, he wasn't portrayed as like, none of them are really portrayed as like super sappy and like they can't take care of themselves, because the lunchroom scene to me was like really important, because to be in high school and to be bullied is rough, but standing up to that person that you're bullying, let alone standing up, the person that's bullying you, let alone standing up to your like secret lover in front of the whole school, and he punched him in the face. And you could just tell, like, the punch was a mix of, like, hurt and anger. And it was like, I love you, but I'm about to punch you. And then the sister even tries to jump in and fight, like, a group of guys. Mm-hmm. And to me, you don't really see, like, I haven't seen, like, the portrayal of, like, gay men, like, fighting. It's just, like, if it's a movie, it's like, oh, they beat up this person because he's different. It's not, oh, he fought back. So, like, I don't know if anybody else got that, but, like, I noticed it a lot. Just because when I watch movies, it's like, oh, we're gonna bully him because he's openly gay. It's not like, you never see the person, like, fighting back.
I think to add on to that, Tony, I think in the beginning, they did a nice job of just empowering Patrick from the beginning. He's mocking the professor.
Yeah.
And he comes in and he's like, you know, you're a senior in a freshman class. And he owns that too.
Yeah.
So something about owning who you are and where you are within that moment.
I don't know if you caught this. So that was the shop teacher, I think. And he did a homophobic slur there, where he, rather than calling him Patrick, he called him Patty Cakes.
Yeah.
And so it was sort of like some teacher bullying going on in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, even with him, that was like two things getting thrown out by the teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of even calling him Patty Cakes and then trying to belittle him, saying he's a senior in a freshman class. It's like,
and then calling him nothing.
Yeah. So it's like getting all of this, I want to say, adversity or attacks, verbally being attacked, but still Patrick being able to handle it.
Patrick seemed to me the most mentally healthy character and very resilient.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, part of me when I watched that was curious about, is that encounter with the professor what made Charlie speak to him at the game? Because he was able to witness him being probably attacked in a similar fashion that he probably experienced. But to have that response and still be able to go about and say, wow.
Hmm. And internally, like, he had an internal dialogue while this scene was happening where Charlie was thinking, wow, I actually feel bad for Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't trying to be mean to the professor. He was trying to be nice to us freshmen and not make fun of us freshmen.
Yeah. It was
so
a nice switch, I think he
kind
said.
Of solidarity, and that chance that he got to relate with Patrick, where everybody was calling him nothing, and he had that chance to be like, look, I see you as a real person, as not as nothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in contrast to the shop teacher, the English teacher,
Woo.
I think Mr. Anderson, played by Paul Rudd. And
I loved it.
By the way, I think
Hello,
Paul Rudd is one of my favorite
Paul
actors.
Paul Rudd's fantastic, absolutely.
And he was so great in this film. And as some of you know, I'm a former high school teacher long ago. Actually, around the time period that this was set in. And, you know, I only hope that I was able to have that type of impact on students.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of these side characters were incredible in the way that we, like, looked at them. Like, we all knew that shop teacher who said, like, nasty things to students that we look back now and we're like, wow, I wish I had more power and could have done something about it. Then there's the great English teacher, who's Paul Rudd, who made you always feel good and cared more about you than just like you're a student and you leave at the end of the day. I think the parents, which was Kate Walsh and Dylan McDermott, is that
yes.
what it is? Played fantastic roles of these people who are also trying to cope with it themselves. Their kid is, I mean, especially what they probably say in the 90s, quote unquote, not normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing the quotes because, like,
what is normal?
He's, yeah, exactly. But he's suffering, and they don't know how to do it either. They're trying to get through the best they can. I think it's funny, too. Like, the younger I was like, my parents did this wrong and this wrong and this wrong. And, like, the older I get now, I'm like, they didn't have a fucking clue what they were doing. And I don't feel like an adult. I'm 30 now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So seeing the parents now playing that role, I'm like, oh, my gosh. They're just trying to do the best they can as well.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, also want to give props to Joan Cusack, who plays
yes.
the psychologist or
yeah.
psychiatrist at the end, because
yeah.
we love Joan Cusack.
Yes.
Yeah. The whole, like, all the characters kind of, like, remind me of, like, the, what is it, the Gestalt?
Yeah.
Idea that, like,
yeah.
the whole is the sum of its parts. Like, it's not just,
greater
like,
than.
You... Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, we could have did without this character. It's like, every single character made up this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with the parents. Like, I love that, like, the role of the dad wasn't the stereotypical, well, like, you know, men don't cry, just get
pull
over
yourself
it.
Yourself up
like,
by your bootstraps.
Yeah. I love that the dad was so, like, understanding and, like, oh, you okay? How are you doing? And...
Mm-hmm.
The mom wasn't just like, oh my god. This was probably, in my opinion, one of the best family portrayals of all the movies we've seen.
Definitely a contrast to Ordinary People.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I did have a little bit of a incongruence for me because some scenes or some interactions to me seemed a little bit too nice. Like, from my experiences in high school and from my experiences with, you know, my quirky friend group and from other, like, you know, just interactions, it wasn't as pretty. And, like, for instance, the relationships that the siblings had, it made me feel good. Like, it was great to witness that everybody was supportive of each other.
Mm-hmm.
But from people that I know that have siblings, 90%
yeah.
of the times the
yeah.
siblings are not as
there
supportive.
There are parts of it that are like, you
yeah.
question the realism to it.
Or kind
of
like the drugs. That was
or even
very...
just like a senior girl being willing to like date a freshman boy. I mean,
oh,
it,
yeah.
Yeah.
That, that was normal in my
time.
Oh, okay.
Or it was
yeah.
not in mine. Like,
no,
that would never.
Yeah.
yeah.
It was
there
very...
were questions that were like, this is for the story.
Yeah. In the book, the like sibling dynamics, like I said earlier about the brother and the sister being a lot closer in the book, they got into it a lot in the book, especially over her relationship
mm-hmm.
with, what is it, Ponytail Derek?
Yeah.
Yep.
And the brother, like, he was there, like, in the movie, but, like, in the book, I think, I don't remember much about it, but it was kind of strained. So, I understand what you mean about the, like, interactions with the
yeah.
people.
There's certain parts you kind of just have to take for granted
sure.
and be like,
yeah. Like, can I point out, the ending was not the ending in the book. The ending where he's, like, standing, like, through the tunnel,
yeah.
that happens in the middle of the book.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And I think that when he says in the middle of the movie, like, I felt infinite in this moment,
I feel infinite.
That's at the end of the book.
No, I thought
yeah, he,
that was at the end of the movie,
he did,
too.
He said it
yeah,
twice.
He said it twice.
Oh,
but,
okay.
like, I don't think he said it in the middle of the book.
I don't remember at all.
I don't remember, but I do know that there was, like, some, like, switching, and I was just like, no!
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, to have something visually play out
yeah.
in a film, there are, like you said, films are great for the beginning, middle, and end, to have
right.
that kind of
yeah.
substance
mm-hmm.
there,
yeah.
where books don't have to do that. The literary, the...
Yeah.
narrative point of view can be a lot easier.
So there's one anomaly related to mom that I wanted, I think it's mom, I wanted to ask you all about.
Mm-hmm.
I did use my pause button again to try to catch it because it's really quick. In one of the flashbacks toward the end, and it might be shortly before, in real time, Charlie gets hospitalized again. But we see Charlie approaching someone who's kind of in the shadows, a woman who is sobbing. I'm thinking it's mom, and that mom is crying over losing her sister Helen. And they flash to her wrists, and we see scars from having slit wrists.
I thought that was the aunt.
That was the aunt. That was the aunt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I think that the whole reason the aunt went to go stay with them was what I got from it was something that happened with her and her previous relationship.
Okay.
Because in the beginning of the movie, when the sister gets slapped by her boyfriend, and Charlie's like charging in to hit him, and she's like, "No, Charlie, I got this," and they're talking, and he's like, she's like, "Oh, he only hit me. That's the first time he's ever hit me." And Charlie alludes to like, "Oh, like Aunt Helen's boyfriends or something."
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it was like that led to some of Aunt like Helen like having some type of abuse in her relationship.
Okay.
And the whole like
yeah.
cutting.
Now it makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. It was interesting that the parents didn't know what happened to Charlie. So it's kind of like their understanding is like, oh, his best friend committed suicide. It's not like, oh, his best friend committed suicide and he was sexually abused at a really early age. And I think that put a lot more like perspective into like how they go about doing things, because you could tell like throughout the whole movie they were kind of like walking on eggshells around him. Like, are you okay? Like making sure like it's going to be okay. And even at the end when he finally comes home, and they're all sitting at the table kind of like not knowing what to say.
Yeah.
It's like Charlie had to like take the initiative to like show them like I'm okay.
He asks about the Penguins.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh Penguins. Yeah.
So what do you guys think that this movie asks to take for us to take away from it? What are we taking away?
And I'm not sure if this is the same question, but if we think of the title, The Perks of Being a Wallflower, you know, what are those perks? And so
my takeaway is that everyone, like, it really reinforces, like, don't judge a book by its cover, because everyone is going through something that you know nothing about. Mm-hmm. And just that high school isn't as like cut and dry as it used to be portrayed. Like there's a lot of different dynamics and people run in very, like all the social circles aren't really like impenetrable anymore. It's like you can be the star of the football team and be gay. You can be like super artsy, but like wanna go to a school dance. It's just like reinforcing to me that like it's not as like status quo as like it used to be portrayed like in the 90s.
And I think like I really love the nostalgia with it, because there are times that I'm watching and it reminds me of like my high school experience and whatnot, and I, you know, went through pictures again over the weekend thinking about it. I have probably 2 or 3, maybe 4 or 5 people from high school I still stay in touch with, not nearly as much as it used to be, because, you know, actually though, just I was having a really hard time with the election, like we've talked about, really, really down from it. And my best friend from high school sent me a gift that I wasn't aware of. It was a wine glass, and have you ever watched Grey's Anatomy? They have a whole thing that's like, you're my person.
You got a wine glass?
She sent me a wine glass that says, you're my person,
that's
you'll
amazing.
Always be my person.
That
wow.
is amazing.
Do you know what she got?
It was Etsy. I'll give it to you later. I still have the card. But it was funny because I've been watching this film thinking about, like, you know, yes, for the most part, the people we meet in our lives will play a significant role for the time that they're there, and then they will go, and there's nothing wrong with that mm-hmm. as well. But a few choice few we will have forever somehow in our lives. And there's one line in the film that says, we accept the love we think we deserve. Mm-hmm. And I just think mm-hmm. that is so, so true. And in high school, I accepted what I thought I deserved, which was less at the time, maybe. Mm-hmm. But the people who helped bring me through, helped me become me and the person I am today, people like my best friend Molly, who sent me this wine glass, like helped me know the love I deserve. And I think everyone in this film kind of is starting to realize how much they deserve, and surrounding themselves with the people that make them feel good, and that we can make each other feel good, mm-hmm. that we're, like you said, all in it together. But at the end of the day, we're all our own main characters in the book of our own lives. lives and making sure that we get what we deserve in our books.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, Adam, because on the trivia for this movie, I think they were talking about Sam. I'm not sure, but they were basically saying when they created the cast, one of the ways that they kind of sold the part is that this will be one of your most important roles, and it may create your best friends for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, even though they are playing these roles of high school, sometimes these are the people that you know, you remain friends with, as you say, such as your friend Molly. But at the same instance, even as actors and actresses, sometimes it is these roles that they get so connected and so vested with individuals in that kind of carry them on, and they form lasting relationships with these individuals. And I think as we all have some connection or relation to a high school experience, I think that's what allows them to really get into the role and kind of, you know, even if it isn't the adversity or the obstacle they faced at that time, it somehow it does play a role in saying, well, I remember a similar situation or some type of loss or some type of experience.
No, we all have it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has some kind of trauma or something in their past. Some are larger than others, some are going to affect people more than others, and some people have more resilience than others. But no matter where you fall in that spectrum, like, you are not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be someone who can help you, whether it's a mental health professional like we see in the film, or a really good friend that's also going to be there.
I like the idea of self-love conquering societal views, because they all, well, from, like, on a spectrum from Patrick, who loved himself undeniably and you couldn't tell him anything.
Oh.
All the way down to Sam, who admits that she feels small and she makes herself small around certain men. Like, just the idea that, like, loving yourself is, like, the main priority, no matter what anybody thinks. Even though high school is rough, you have to love yourself no matter what, because that's the only way you're going to get through it. And a support system.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing a lot of hope here again.
It's a little hope, yeah.
There is, and there's another line. So, Adam, what you were just saying reminded me a little of narrative theory. You know, that we're the main characters on our books.
Sure.
And so there's a line from the film, and I don't remember who said it, that says, "This one moment when you know you're not a sad story."
Mm-hmm.
And like when Sam comes back from her first couple months at college, and Charlie is out of the hospital, I think, and she says, "It gets better. There's a whole other world out there."
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really that hope
idea
coming through. And I want to say, I mentioned just how much I love the use of music in this film. And it starts off with "Asleep" by The Smiths, which just couldn't be a more perfect song, which is essentially about going to sleep and not waking up. And yet then coming to this powerful use of "Heroes" by David Bowie. "We can be heroes just for one day." And a little trivia about that song. It's always been a favorite song of mine. And David Bowie was recording, I think, the album Berlin. Or, no, maybe it was Low. But he was in, I think, West Berlin, looking at the Berlin Wall that existed at the time. And he saw these two workers, like, come out of a building, a man and a woman. And they started kissing next to the wall, even though they were surrounded by... So even though they were surrounded by this gloom and despair, they were able to find happiness within that.
Mm.
And I think that's really like kind of the spirit I get from that song. And then as they're rushing through the tunnel and it's playing, I think it's just so hopeful.
Yeah. You know, there's one other thing I thought of while watching this. I'm curious if anyone else has done this too. This film I've actually only watched by myself. Like, I just, the first time I ever watched it, I was sick. And, you know, you want to be alone and just kind of you know, take your medicine and go to bed. And then I watched it a couple other times, but it always ends up being like late at night with like a glass of wine or like something. And I wonder if I'll have a different feeling if watching it with people, because when it's over, I feel very lonely when I watch it alone. Mm. I just feel incredibly like womp womp, like a case of the womp womps after it's over. And I think maybe it's because like their life is changing so much and they're all going to different places and I'm here alone without my friends and family and support system. Like I finished watching it last night and was like, I feel so alone now and sad. Mm. I didn't have wine this time.
I watched it and just like made me even more like wanting to go into school counseling. Mm. Just because it's like, every time I see it, I'm just like, first I cry, and then I'm happy, and then I'm sad, and then I'm mad, then I cry. I go through all the range of emotions. Sure. And then at the end, I'm just like, yes, people need people like this. And then I'm just like, I try to like, I don't really feel alone. I feel like, oh, that's sad. You know how I feel about happy endings.
Absolutely.
I'm just like, it's so heartwarming, and he's gonna be okay.
So it kind of uplifts you and gives you motivation.
Yeah, it uplifts me just because I know that, well, I personally do have friends that are like a good support system, so I like think about them and I'm like, I'm not a wallflower, but I had that support system. No, not in my school. I was unpopularly popular.
You're my wallflower.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I think just listening to the two of you, it sounds like just watching this produces a lot of self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's self-reflection of the here and now. Because Tony's experience was more of a, all right, you know, I'm happy to be a counselor in training, but more so for the school. And then to hear you, Adam, it's more of listening to that, you know, here in this moment, you know, I can relate to this because here at this institution, you know, it's not as many people as if I was in high school or if I was back in my hometown. So
yeah. I feel that way, I think, a lot with coming of age kind of films.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you reflect and you think like where you were at that time. And then you almost get this little bit of a fear. It's like, did I peak? Like, did I peak in high school? Did
in
college? You know what
you
I
know
mean?
When
like, is it just downhill from here?
I think you know. You wouldn't know, but, like, other people would know if you peaked in high school.
But the end of this
film...
If
Prom King in high school, I might have peaked.
At the end of this film, though, leaves me with that hopeful, like, growth idea. Mm. Because everyone's going off, like, well... It's great that everyone got into college, so really excited for them. but this idea that there is that new world that we're transitioning to, and there is life after high school. So even though this movie ends, there's still, what, like 1,904 days or whatever of high school. There is that university experience. There is that still that life that we're meant to grow in
sure.
and create new relationships. But not forget the old.
And I want to bring up Charlie's healing. So this is kind of stuck with me, and I don't fully have it formulated. But I want to say that Sam took the place of Aunt Helen in a healing, positive way. And I think that was done intentionally by the creators of the film. So, of course, we first find out that Sam has the same background of abuse that Aunt Helen had, and this is before we know about what she did to Charlie. And then when Aunt Helen died on Charlie's birthday, she had gone to get him that 45 by the Beatles, Something, which is one of the most romantic songs ever written. And then Charlie gives that same 45 that was so significant. He gives that to Sam. Blah, blah, blah. Lots of other things happen. And then when his like real flashbacks start to happen are when he's kissing Sam and she starts to rub his leg, which we infer that that's what Helen had done.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then he gets to the hospital and then it seems like he's better.
Yeah.
So it reminds me of how this idea, we'll just say, in group counseling, recapitulation of family of origin, mm-hmm. that you can heal past relationships through your current relationships mm-hmm. and interactions.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm also curious, just kind of everyone's perceptions, especially after watching.
Oh, can I say one more
thing
too? And then Sam saying to Charlie, "I want the first person to kiss you to be someone who loved you," and then we later find out Aunt Helen kissed him, mm-hmm. which has that parallel also. And then, of course, that didn't happen with Sam because it was her dad's boss, Robert. Okay.
Last week we had Stevie who was a male who was a sexual offender.
Yes.
And we all had a lot of mixed feelings. I know there was a lot of, and, you know, reading through what people say online, there was a lot of anger and, dare I say, like almost hatred towards Stevie for his actions. And I'm curious what everyone kind of thought of Aunt Helen, because I don't think the reader of the book or the viewer of the film has the same. I mean, we have a negative feeling toward her for what happened, but we also have empathy for her for what happened to her. I guess I'm just curious, does the person's gender or somehow something about this make it less prominent, less evil to us? Because even reading blogs, I did not get a ton of people who had this really negative reaction toward Aunt Helen, when in reality, she did some bad things.
Maybe it's because she died. Not to sound like that, but like the fact that she was very absent from the movie and you know early on that she's dead, it's kind of like, okay, well, she can't hurt anybody. So I think that maybe like the thinking, like she didn't play as, like she played a big role, but it wasn't as much screen time as Stevie was. And it was like, you heard more about like Stevie's life and how he, like, his actions affect other people. And it's just like, oh, Aunt Helen affected Charlie, but he wouldn't speak on it really until the
end. But Charlie also loved Aunt Helen.
Right.
Huge difference there as well.
That was one of the things that I was going to point out, was I think Charlie's perception of his aunt might have colored the viewers, because he was the narrator. And mm-hmm. most of the depictions until the end of Aunt Helen was that she was sweet, she was kind, she gave him presents, you know, she was like the cool aunt that
you know
he connected with, that was kind to him until that. And I'm not sure whether he might have repressed some of those things that happened.
Probably.
In order to not think about it every day. So in order not to have that trauma and those flashbacks, he may have repressed some of those things for a while until that breakdown. But I agree with you that it may also be because she is a female
mm-hmm.
and relatively middle class, like probably educated.
Mm-hmm.
And that colors our perception.
Yeah.
I kind of had another thought that it relates to something that was said earlier, but I think I just gotta kind of go off what I was thinking already. So, related to this fact that this difference in portrayal, it's interesting because I think as we talk about this and kind of think about this from a clinical perspective, when you think about gifts and it happening from someone that is already in the family, because I think a lot of the media portrayals or even just the conversation about sexual assaults and harassment, they don't usually when they hear everything that you said, they were kind, they gave gifts, you also get that negative side immediately. And because it was delayed, I think being able to say both of these things happened and they weren't great, they weren't good, allows the action to still be considered in the light that this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we aren't portraying, well, justice was served because she died or one thing or another. But I think also it's expanded upon because I think, Scott, you were highlighting that Sam takes on this view. And I think you mentioned about how her first kiss, he asks her or says or suggests her first kiss be by someone she loved.
She says she wants that for Charlie. She wants Charlie's first kiss to be by someone who loves him or something like that.
Yeah. So when we already learn about her first kiss, I'm thinking of the shift of the nature of this was a relationship that up until the end appeared to be very loving and nurturing. However, Sam's approach into this allows that aspect of healing to say, now let this be something that is not harmful to you or some more trauma, but more of a healing where you actually are with someone that cares about you in a sense that it doesn't cross boundaries, but something that is formed by someone you love and you kiss them. So I think it serves that purpose to say this was an individual who, yeah, there were pleasant memories, but they were also bad. And if Sam has so much similarity, to be able to witness her trauma, hear about it, kind of brings out, okay, although Aunt Hella wants this to me, I also recognize this within her. And part of that healing and the recapitulation of family origin, now this is someone that actually has not crossed that boundary or treated me in any harmful ways, but has actually kept to, not promise, but for lack of a better term, wanted me to be well in all aspects and not really harm me as I have been hurt in the past, but kind of reframes the story of Aunt Helen. Yes, that was wrong, and brings it to light that is wrong because you see so many parallels between their story.
Yeah.
And now here is how I can reframe it and say, I know that happened, but here's another situation very similar, and this person isn't doing me wrong as I have been done in the past by someone who I also felt very close and connected to. I think that took a long way around about to say what I wanted to say, but it came together at the end.
It did. It worked.
So that's what I was trying to get at.
Well, and even now, here's another one. Sam and Patrick, they go somewhere, and so they say to Charlie, sorry, we can't be here for your birthday. And then the last thing that Aunt Helen says is, I'm going to get your birthday present. So I really think there was an intentional parallel between Sam and Helen.
Yeah. It's like his first encounter with, like, a woman. It didn't go, like, it was, like, an abusive. So, like, his second, well, third after Mary Elizabeth, his third encounter was, like, kind of like showed him how it should go, like,
yeah,
you know,
how it could be,
how love can be, because he kind of, like, in the middle with Mary Elizabeth, he kind of just, like, accepted it, like, okay, now I have a girlfriend and I don't know how to break up with her, because he is kind of awkward and he doesn't know how to have a girlfriend, so he didn't know he was allowed to break up with her, and then he did it in the worst way where he kissed Sam at a party, so. It was like
and
a lot
his
of
imagined line ahead of that where he imagines he says truth and, like, how's your relationship going? Well, I keep fantasizing that one of us is dying of cancer, so I'm trying to break up.
In his, like, inner thoughts, like, during the movie, like, the split seconds where he was, like, kissing Mary Elizabeth, but then he thought it was Sam, so then it's kind of that's how he got through it, and it was hard to watch because it was just so... funny.
Yeah, and in a way, like, you watch, like, the character with Mary Elizabeth, and you're like, she is annoying, and you would, like, you know, maybe not want to be dating someone like that, but then you also are like, poor Mary Elizabeth, like, she's a real person character that you can
it kind of alludes
someone exists like that.
Yeah, they kind of allude to, like, the issues between her and Sam, especially when it comes to guys.
Yeah,
and that's why like Charlie was kind of like ostracized for a moment after the party. So it kind of, the character of Mary Elizabeth was like, I know someone like that. It's kind of just like trying to overshadow their like, overshadow everybody else with their accomplishments type person. Anything you didn't like about the movie?
I mean, I looked up a little trivia and I remember looking at it last night that I thought was interesting with it is that the original filmmaker who was supposed to make the film, who got the rights to the film, was John Hughes. Who did like Breakfast Club and Pretty in Pink and Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and he'd started writing the screenplay but got busy with another project and never finished it. But his idea was to have Shia LaBeouf play Charlie, Kirsten Dunst play Sam, and Patrick Huget, who was in Almost Famous, he was the main character in Almost Famous, play Patrick. And just what a different film that would have been had that actually happened.
I'm glad it didn't.
I love me some Kirsten Dunst versus Suicides, and she would have been great in the role.
Like, I love them, but it's just like, I was glad it was like, kind of like, well, Emma Watson's known, but she was like a one role person. And then like, see how that shift is. Plus, I like Ezra Miller, and I like Logan Lerman, because I've seen them play different roles. Like, Ezra Miller is about to be in a superhero movie, so that kind of like being able to like shift between movies is what I value in a character. Plus, I love Kirsten Dunst, but I'm tired of her.
Who's tired of her now? She's nowhere.
Exactly. And it's like, I like John Hughes, but the whole 80s, 90s celebrity Rat Pack movie kind
of
like...
It would have been much more of a darker comedy kind of thing.
I'm glad it went the route it went. Because I feel like when I think about stereotypical high school movies, I think of John Hughes and Pretty in Pink and The Breakfast Club, where it's like, oh, we have detention, but we'll never talk after this. It's like, no, that's not what high school is. If I see you once, I'm talking to you every day.
I believe you when you say that.
Okay, I did find the one line I was looking for an hour and 15 minutes ago, that it gets repeated. So after Charlie walks in on Patrick and Brad, and then Helen says the same line, it's going to be our little secret. And so that idea that some things are not acceptable to,
I think his sister says that in the book too, when it comes to the abortion.
Oh.
Like being pregnant or something.
Yeah, and maybe about Ponytail Derek when he hits her, slaps her.
Ooh, there it goes.
Things. And then I don't know if I have said this or not, but I myself, for groups that I've been involved with, have used the metaphor of the island of misfit toys. And boy, it just seems so appropriate. I love that metaphor.
The metaphors in this movie were amazing.
Yeah. From, I think that's from Santa Claus is Coming to Town, or
one of those.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed
Reindeer.
Yeah. And it kind of signifies that universality through our quirkiness and individuality. Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah,
we definitely sounded like the people in the band down by the river.
The general consensus was
Matt Foley.
Hopeful. So what are we discussing next week?
So next week is Silver Linings Playbook, which I think will be Adam.
Yep.
Yeah, and then
overly prepared, because I know you have some ideas.
That's right. I'm not as much of a fan.
But I'm excited. This will be a really
good
discussion.
I've only seen it one time in the theater, so I'm looking forward to watching it now. And by the way, even on the IMDb message board, there was like this ginormous thread comparing Perks of Being a Wallflower to Silver Linings Playbook. And I intentionally did not read that thread, but it's possible that there are merits to it that I have not yet seen, so I'm looking forward to seeing it a second time.
Agreed.
I do love Jennifer Lawrence also.
I'll bring that up next week.
All right. Okay. And so just our usual housekeeping things. Thank you for anyone who has made it this far listening to this podcast. We are on social media. We have a Twitter account, MINPC5. Mm-hmm. We also have a Gmail account. We are looking for ideas for next semester, and we are wanting to include more films, but also move beyond film to possibilities like other podcasts or songs or videos or blogs or TV or etc. And so please send us suggestions, mentalillnessinpopculture@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook page and
Twitter. You said that.
Right. And then we have a Facebook page. We are available through iTunes. If you could give us a favorable rating, that would be really cool. That bumps our rating and then more people listen to us. And that's about it. Facebook, yeah.
Tweet us, write us, email us, and happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, and we have our webpage on Podomatic also, mm-hmm. which is what we use. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks.
See you. Till next time.
I know, right?